think so.
Okay.
Hi.
So I'm Laura Heine. I'm on the Windows team and a program manager focused on user experience. Specifically, I work with partners getting their app UX ready for showcase quality.
My name is Will Chumi. I'm a principal user experience advisor, and I'm part of the developer platform evangelism group of Microsoft. So I work with our partners to help them understand the Microsoft design style and bring great applications to the market.
And hopefully you got a chance to see Will's talk earlier. And if not, the Microsoft Design Language talk session was streamed and will be available later online.
Yep.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Is that not working?
No.
Do the introduction.
So today we want to spend a few minutes talking with you about where to find UX guidelines and the phases of things that you can do from an app review standpoint, including some tips that are specific around making sure that you're checking through your apps. I'm really excited in order to spend time talking with all of you, and actually I want to learn about the apps that you're building and the types of things that you're doing. I was standing in the area as you guys were waiting in order to come in and asking questions to a few of you. It sounds like some of you already have apps in store. Some are currently building them right now. Could we just do a show of hands to see how many are in progress or near submitting to store and how many already have? Yeah. Wow.
About a third.
So that's impressive. Congratulations to all of you for getting that far. And thank you for taking time also to come here. I think some of the tips that we'll have today will be completely relevant even if you have something in store, because what we're talking about are cyclical type of checks that you can do in order to make sure that when you're self-evaluating your app that you can still apply them. So there are a couple of key places that we'll just give you right up front in order to keep in mind. Information around user experience guidelines is available on the Windows Developer Center. Specifically, you can go to design.windows.com as an entry point and bookmark that site. Make it your homepage and keep that available for you at all times. There is also a convenient document that's on the index page of the UX guidelines, which is a single document with all of them included within there. So you can download that and keep that as a reference for you. Another place that we have some information that's brand new is windowsstore.com, and we have some partner success stories there. On there, there's some videos of design agencies as well as of app developers who have been able to retell some of the stories of things that they've gone through recently. And so you may find those useful. And in those videos, they include some tips and other types of things also that could be supplemental to the things we're talking about here.
It's also worth mentioning that some of the agencies that are showcased on windowsstore.com are also here in the feature area, in the showcase
yes.
area here at Build. So if you want to have a conversation with one of them, if you want to have go into a deeper conversation around your particular application scenario, I'm sure they'd be happy to speak with you.
Yeah. And additionally, I'll mention it now, and we'll talk about it in the middle, and we'll talk about it in the end. Also in the Windows Showcase area, we have a special section set up called the App Fast Track. And the App Fast Track area, you can schedule 20 minutes in order to spend with a consultant and go through either the early concept of your app or the if you have wireframes or comps, they can give you feedback specifically on those. Or if you've already submitted to store, which several of those who have scheduled, they're like, hey, I've already submitted, but I want to improve my app to the next level. Go ahead, spend time with them. They'll give you some feedback on how you can improve your user experience and better integrate with the platform.
One thing that's worth mentioning about the App Fast Track people, they're very good. They see virtually the entire breadth of applications that are going through the store, or at least the depth applications that are going through the store. And one of the benefits of that is those applications that have gone through the process, that have implemented the suggested changes, they tend to score somewhere between half a star and a full star higher versus the average app in that category. So definitely listen to their feedback.
That's very true. Additionally, they can help with some of the reminders around things that you will need in order to submit for certification. In addition to UX people, there's also test and dev people available in order to help answer any questions, too. Also, one of the things that I learned about the audience who's sitting here is that though there are a large number of designers, there's also quite a few programmers here who are wanting to learn a little bit more about UX and the implications. And so I think from that standpoint, we'll be able to answer your questions to a certain point, and then if you do need some developer assistance, the App Fast Track area can help you continue from there. So design is essential to your app. It's, you need to integrate it with every single release, and with each phase of your creation process, there are certain types of things that you can do in order to check yourself, make sure that you're doing things that will help the user and be able to improve the overall experience. The process that we have on the slide is a four-step phase, and we've used this with thousands of apps that have come through in the recent time frame. And we want to make sure that we're sharing the information with you so you can continue to apply this to your own process and integrate it in, as well as the tips that we've learned in order to help improve the small phases and the incremental areas that you have. Some of the examples of apps that have applied this process would be like Living Social, the Oprah Winfrey Network, and again, you can do this with your own app also. So, phase one, when you think about the prototype or the early concept of your app, you can start to identify and scope, of course, the core scenarios. But once you've gotten to a certain point, you also should be able to go back and then check against the Microsoft design principles to see from an alignment standpoint how you are. Are the scenarios that you have decided to support, are they supporting the... Are they focused, and are they able to support your best at statement? And in Will's previous talk, and this is why I'm looking at him quickly, in Will's previous talk, he just went over how to form a best at statement and how to focus that statement.
Sorry. Go ahead. It was something that we ended up talking a little bit about in some of the questions afterwards. So the best at statement is something that we find is a really useful process as you're going through the different stages of your experience design. Ultimately, the best at statement is intended to be sort of a thesis statement or a scope statement for the experience of your application. And what we really want to come out of it is it's a single sentence that describes why your application is best at X in its category. And we want that statement to include things like who's it best at for, right? Where is it best at? Or what's the population of users that it's best at for? When is it best at? Right? Is it best at for right now? Is it best at for planning next week? Is it best at for doing XYZ? This is going to be hard, and it's not marketing speak. Ultimately, it's trying to come up with sort of a line in the sand that says, okay, everything on this side we're going to build in this release. Everything beyond that we're going to push out. And if you have that level of focus, it means that everything else ends up being an iterative refinement from there.
And so then when you move into the second phase of the creation process, you may be building your wireframes and your visual comps, and you're going to want to take a look again. Everything is planned out with extreme detail, and you're going to include what the interactions are that you hope to be able to communicate to the developer. At this point, though, you have another chance in order to look through and see what's actually aligning now, more specifically from the design principles, but now to the design guidelines themselves. So are you positioning the flyouts in a way that the guidelines are suggesting? Are you looking at the app bar in a way where the commands are placed on the bottom and the navigation is placed on top? If so, I have one little tip that I really like, and we'll go more into navigation and commanding in a bit, but one tip that I really like is making sure that you take all of your app bars across the app and line them up and make sure that the same command is in the same location across the app for the user. And maybe you have another little tip along those lines that you like too.
The big thing for me is either when you're at the level of just sort of sketching out what your wireframes are, or even when you're down at the level of doing pixel perfect comps, one of the easiest ways to find kind of crummy applications is if they have a ragged margin, right? So think about either applying a grid to your design. Think about if you're actually hand sketching. Think about working on graph paper. I have reams of this stuff in my office now. That sort of basic structure, make sure that you're aligned to that underlying Metro grid, to that underlying Windows 8 grid, which is what also gives you the structure to your content, and it also allows you to scale effectively across multiple screen resolutions.
So we'll go into more tips similar to those in a couple moments, but for the moment we'll continue on with the phases that you can go through as you're going through your app creation process. The third one is once you have your app package built and you're starting to integrate the UI and throughout the process of integrating the UI, you can start to look at some additional pieces with that app review. You can confirm that the UI is actually being integrated as the designer intended. That's a really big one. Frequently, apps are created, app projects could be 4 weeks, they could be several months long. And so it's very likely that maybe you've cut some features in the process, and what are the implications now of those? What if you change your login, logout situation? Maybe there's some different experiences that the user will need to have there, or maybe some other affordances need to be made. And so other types of things that can be checked at this stage now, for the first time you can actually confirm that though the wireframe is said to have visual feedback for touch, you've actually included that within the app. And so that when the user puts their finger on top of a section header, that it's actually giving a cue to the user that this is an area that's touchable and that there's some interaction there.
The other thing that's absolutely critical at this stage, now that you actually have bits, and this is something that you really need to be integrating into your development process overall, we have this thing called the Windows Application Certification Kit, which we lovingly called WAC. This is the set of technical tests that your application will be run through when you go into store submission. So if you can't pass WAC on your own machine, then you won't pass WAC when you submit to the store, and your application will get rejected out of hand. Just make it part of your process. The design piece is, of course, super important. It's why Laura and I are up here. But at the end of the day, there's also this big technical component that you also need to make sure that you're aware of, and we give you a lot of tools that help you get through that.
And of course, you want to pass WAC. That's your major step in order to move forward to submit to the store. Once you have submitted to the store, your work's not over yet, though. There's some more things that you can do in order to help make sure that your user experience is what your users expect and that it's useful and usable to them, and hopefully even delightful. And we know that you have the core idea of the product. Again, go back through and see if the user's making additional suggestions about the features or the type of features that the way that they've been implemented. Maybe there's a way that's more consistent that the UX guidelines suggest that you could make an adjustment and align to. There are different types of things like this. This is an iterative process, and there are also maybe some really great contributions for the next version of your app, and at that point you get to start at phase one all over again.
The last thing that's worth mentioning, and we're not going to really go into any detail on this in this talk, but the store dashboard gives you a ton of telemetry in terms of how long users are typically engaged with your applications, what are the types of devices that they're using in your application, dropout points, that type of stuff. In addition to absolutely reviewing the comments, you should also be looking at that type of telemetry in order to get a better sense of how your application is being used in the real world.
So there's another key point that we want to make when we're talking about the high-level positioning that you want to take in the involvement, and that's to make sure that the app is actually delivering the end-to-end experiences within the app. And so when the user opens your app for the first time, they should be able to tell immediately what the value is that's being delivered and what they can do with it. And so when you're going through this process overall at each place, make sure you're staying aligned with that and make sure that the app has a clear, articulable user experience goal. In terms of a couple of examples, if it's a shopping app, make sure that the user can browse through the content in order to find a product. Make sure that they can search for a product by name if they need to, and then finally help them be able to complete the purchase all within the app without having to leave the experience. Likewise, if it's a video streaming app, if they should be able to, again, browse the videos and the movies that are available to them. And from a selection, you can curate that and provide additional content, of course, and help guide them through to what they need. But additionally, they should be able to search, again, for it. And that would be that the user would be swiping from the edge and tapping search and then entering their information and then have a search results page so that they can find that in a consistent way. And then finally, that the user should be able to play the video. And playing that video, whether it's in full screen or snap view, portrait, or any other type of situation from an interaction standpoint that you may need to support. So now let's be a little bit more practical. And
is that thing just dead?
Yeah. I don't know. Now that we've talked about the process, let's talk about the approach. And how do you get users into your app? And that's through tiles. And so there are some checkpoints that you can do along the way in order to talk about tiles. We've talked about tiles generally in other sessions. But let's go ahead and start with what the user sees when they first open their system, and this is one of the entry points into their app. So tiles are the front door to your app. They invite the user to come in and to return. You should have information that is fresh and inviting to the user and rich and engaging content that's relevant to the things that they want to see and the things that they expect to see from the service that you're delivering. And so when they tap this tile, then at that point it will launch your app. There are two different tile sizes. There's a square and a wide. The wide is double the width of the square. And there, you can see from this screenshot that there are some variations in templates. Ah, thank you very much. So there are some variations in templates. And you can also see that in the bottom corner that there are a couple branding opportunities for you. You can include your short name, so the name of the app, or a logo. In order to help the user identify your app from time and time again. But there are some key points around using tiles. If it's a wide tile, please use a layout that has and provide. Please use a layout that is provided and have that layout include live content. Make it alive with activity. Be dynamic and show them relevant information that's very personal to what they want to have. Go ahead.
So this point can't be overstated. The tiles, you are entirely in control of the content that gets presented through the tile. But the design of the tile is provided through templates that are defined in the system. So there's this URL that's listed at the bottom of this slide is a link to all of the different tile templates that are available. You have to be very careful about what you choose, because at the end of the day, that's the layout that you're going to get. But definitely pick early on which of these templates you want to end up using to represent your application.
There are 45 different templates available. And you can just see here, this is the same as the representation in the template catalog on the one side, and then the other side is what it would look like from an entertainment app standpoint. Then it's customized in order to provide specific examples of information to the user so that it's relevant about that content. There are some things in order to think about. And definitely think about what information will your users care about. What do they expect from you in terms of the type of information that they want to see? And then the other piece, which I mentioned a moment ago, is how are they going to know that it's your app? And make sure that you turn either a small logo on or a short name on or something so that they know that it's yours. As content rotates through, you will start to establish the idea that this is yours. And they'll be able to continue to be invited over and over again. On the opposite side, we have the square tiles. And square tiles can be dynamic and alive with content, yes. But if you do not have live content to provide right now, and this is completely an expected situation in the state that many of the apps are in, please use a square tile. And static tiles are square. And so at this point, you can still include your logo. You can still include a short name. And start thinking about when will you be able to share more content with your users? So one of the funny things in talking with partners over the last stretch was that at the beginning of a conversation with them, we would say, please start thinking about using a live tile because it always gets left to the last minute. And then the developer and the designer are not necessarily communicating about what needs to be there. So the developer wasn't working on providing the feed that needs to be there. Make sure you're communicating within your team in order to get this done early. And so that way, when you do launch your app, you're ready to go with a wide tile with activity, and that you're providing an experience for the users to continue to invite them in.
The thing about this is there's a direct conceptual line from your best at statement through to the tile template and the type of content that you want to bring forward. And you know, as Maura talked about, you want to make sure that you're having that conversation early, because at the end of the day, the best at statement just defines why the user is using your application. The tile is what invites the user into the app. Right? So the extent to which you can make your tile actionable, the extent to which you can make your tile interesting, that makes your application all the more likely to draw people into it. Okay, so in this next section, I'm going to talk a little bit about alignment, navigation, layout, and commands. And for those of you that just sat with me in McKinley, some of this is going to be a little bit of a review. But Windows 8 is based on top of this 20 by 20 pixel grid. We end up subdividing the 20 by 20 pixels into subunits, but at the end of the day, this grid is what provides the layout behind all of the Windows 8 applications. And we do this for a couple of different reasons. We do this, one, because that grid provides a skeleton on which to hang your content. You're able to show things like size, position, priority, hierarchy, simply by virtue of its placement, without having to have all of this extra chrome to go ahead and convey that kind of thing. From a technical standpoint, this grid is what enables you to scale your application experience from a small screen like one of the build tablets that you may have seen us walking around with, that's 1366 by 786, all the way up to that big perceptive pixel monitor that Steve Ballmer was showing today during the keynote. Right? Alignment to this grid is what enables you to get that type of scaling without doing subpixel rendering, particularly for things like bitmaps. So this is a sample from Visual Studio. This is the template for a hub app. And what you'll see here right off the bat is I've got that Metro silhouette, right? 120 pixels in from the left. Title is baselined at 100 pixels down from the top. The content area begins at 140 pixels. But just because I have that underlying grid doesn't necessarily mean that it all has to be boxes, right? That it all has to feel like it's this sort of rectilinear grid. This is absolutely aligned to the grid, but you'd never know it simply by virtue of the way that it's presented it. You can see an application like this in the store right now if you look at Cocktail Flow. Cocktail Flow did a tremendous job of actually having these floating cocktails that is absolutely aligned to the grid, but totally doesn't feel like it. It's actually really cool. And so here again, you can see the overlay, right? Logo begins at 100 pixels down from the top. I've got 120 pixels in from the left edge. Content begins at 140 pixels down. There are other applications that will want to play with that silhouette just to basically create a brand experience. And that's okay. We're absolutely fine with you playing with those margins, but we want you to do it deliberately. We don't want you to do it just because. We want you to do it because it's important to the brand. And so in this case, this example really wanted to sort of push the boundaries of how do I make the grid feel a little bit more alive? How do I push the boundaries some? And so you can see that their logo ends up pushing down into the content area some. They still have that 120 pixel margin at the left, which is actually kind of important. You want to make sure that you always have room for your left-hand swipe so you can change applications easily. But at the end of the day, they're still aligned to that underlying grid. So this is something that trips people up sometimes. One of the reasons why Windows 8 does these long horizontal pans is it comes out of that content before Chrome principle that we've talked about over various different talks. It also comes out of the fact that something like 76% of monitors sold these days are either 16 by 9 or 16 by 10. So we want to make sure that content is scrolling along the long edge of the monitor, right? If you're scrolling vertically, it's kind of like watching a standard definition TV show on an HDTV, right? You have the letterboxes. It's wasted space. So The sort of shorthand for thinking about panning is if you're in full screen, you're panning horizontally. And you're actually panning horizontally regardless of whether or not you're holding the device horizontally or vertically. The only exception to that is if you are in snap view. Snap view scrolls vertically, right? So snap view is the 320-pixel the 320-pixel view of your application that is pushed to the side. For many people, particularly those application experiences that are coming out of a more web environment, this will feel strange, right? And it will particularly feel strange for the application developers or the designers. Trust me, after spending time with Windows 8, it really does feel second nature, and you really start to get irritated when stuff doesn't do it. Definitely think about how you're going to transition your experience into this. There are some nuances to this, which we can talk about offline after the session, but in general, think about how you can get your content to scroll horizontally. The next thing that's worth mentioning is this idea of scroll regions. So as a general rule, these are a bad idea. And the number one reason why this is the case is for principles of keeping the user in control and the sense of stability. So I want you to imagine if I'm, go ahead and panning with my finger on a touch device, and I'm panning, and all of a sudden I hit this first area here, right? So all of a sudden, I think I'm scrolling the whole page, and then just that little area moves, right? And I don't know what's going on, and I have to reorient myself. And all of a sudden, I as a user feel out of control. Likewise, and this is actually even worse if you're doing it with a mouse and keyboard, right? So 99% of mice now have a little scroll wheel associated with them. I'm scrolling across the page. As soon as my cursor comes across one of these areas that scrolls separately, then that just scrolls. And then again, I as a user have no idea what's going on. If you do run into a situation in your application where you have to have a section that does need to scroll independently, make sure that scrolls edge to edge. Don't come up with these little regions. It ends up being a really painful experience when you start talking about these environments. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Laura mentioned this a little bit earlier. Flyouts are ultimately the way that we end up getting secondary tasks out of the way of the user, right? You let the user bring it in when they want to invoke something, and you let it get out of the way by tapping outside of it via a light dismiss. Thinking about the placement of your flyout is super important, and this is something that can get relatively easily screwed up if you're not careful. You want to make sure that the flyout is close to the command that invoked it. So in this case, this is a compound filter flyout, right? It sits 10 pixels above the app bar button, the filter button there. And the reason why you want to do that is you want to make sure that there's a visual association between the invoking command and the actual set of things that you're playing with, right? Both of those are light dismiss. So I tap outside, the flyout goes away. Tap outside, the app bar goes away. So let's transition to navigation styles. Windows 8 broadly has two basic navigation patterns. We've got this hierarchical view, and we've got a flat system. And the hierarchical view, the sort of canonical app, is something like the Bing News app, right? I've got a series of different types of content. I can drill into, say, news. I can drill into sports. I can drill into XYZ. And as I go down the sort of information architecture of the application, I'm able to get more content. But I've got kind of a dashboard view up front, and then I can go ahead and drill as I will. The flat system is really designed for movement between bits of content that are not related to each other. And the canonical example of this is something like Internet Explorer, right? So Internet Explorer, I'm on a web page, but if I want to change tabs, I go ahead and swipe down from the top or swipe up from the bottom, and I can go ahead and switch between tabs via that top app bar, right? So if you kind of think about the application experience and what you want to convey, many of you will end up using a hierarchical view if you have particular bits of information that you have to drill into, that you have to allow your user to kind of walk a hierarchy. Those applications that are doing things like content creation, those tend to go more towards the flat system. But this is one of the first things that you're going to have to begin to play with. There's a lot of detail on this if you go to design.windows.com, but this is really one of the first design decisions that you need to make. Am I missing anything? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that hub. The hub is the first screen in your application. To the user, the hub is the visual representation of your app. The way to think about it is it's kind of a dashboard for your application. So you should make sure that you are representing all of the different key scenarios that your application is going to support at some level on the hub. As you do this, one of the first design decisions that you're going to make is how many bits of content are going to show up in each one of those sections, right? So one way that I like to think about it is for the user that I'm trying to address, let's say I'm writing a news app, right? What are the average number of articles that I want to be able to skim at the hub level without having to drill, right? Is that 6? Is that 10? Is that 12? Once you make that decision, then you can start to think about how do you want to play with your semantic zoom? How do you want to represent that information once you drill down to your section view? But at the end of the day, you have to really think about what's the experience that you want to make for the user when they first open up your app. That is the hub. Okay. So from the hub, if the hub is the overview of your app, the individual sections represent exhaustive views of one of those individual portions of the hub, right? And so in Windows 8, we try to avoid anything that's like a more button or something that says see more, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of that ends up being Chrome, right? And we would much rather use that for content. So instead, what we're going to ask you to do is each one of your sections on the hub is going to have a section name, right? That has to be there so that you can properly consume that content. We want you to also make that navigation. So that's how you go ahead and get down into your section view. And you can see that in for instance, the Bing apps. You can see that in PhotoBucket. You can see that in a whole slew of other applications where there'll be a caret, or there'll be an indicator that says show more, or there'll be an indicator that says, you know, showing X of Y, that type of thing. So the section view ends up being your exhaustive view of all of the content in that particular category of information. And then tapping on an individual tile takes you down into a detail view, which shows you the exhaustive view of that particular element. And the way that that kind of view, that kind of three-tier information architecture, really ends up being the sort of basis of these hierarchical navigation applications. We have seen some apps go to 4 tiers, but really anything past that, our usability studies have shown that users tend to get lost. So be careful about that. Think about how your application can flatten its information architecture. This can be challenging for certain categories of applications. Things like e-commerce sites tend to be tough or tend to have to think about this very carefully because most of them have very deep information hierarchies, very deep kind of department lists.
And I think it's just worth mentioning on that slide also the relationship between the hub and the detail level. So on the hub, each of the tiles that are represented actually take the user to the detail level so they can get to the content immediately and start interacting with it. They don't have to go level to level in order to get there.
Absolutely.
And so that's one of the key pieces that when you're looking at your app and you're evaluating, have you done this? That's a simple thing. Just make sure that you're actually exposing content to the user immediately on the hub.
You should be able to access content directly at every tier of your information architecture. The other thing that's worth mentioning, as long as we're talking about these different tiers, your application can be snapped at any point in the experience. That snap is not a navigation event. So for every tier of your information architecture, you also need to think about what's the snap state for that for that particular tier. Likewise, we'd love to have you also think about what's a portrait view, right? You have to think about all of these different aspects to it. Okay, let's talk a little bit about commanding. So once upon a time, we used to call this the navigation bar. We now call it the top app bar. The top app bar is for navigation. And these are ultimately sort of, call them bookmarks, call them destinations, call them specific sections of your application, but they are globally available for your user to always be able to get from point A to point B without having to hit the back button to go back up and down and over. You'll see in design.windows.com, there's also guidance around what's called title flyout navigation, which allows you to basically walk the hierarchy through that. Title flyout tends to be a lot more about showing the sort of context of where the user is now in a hierarchy, allowing them to kind of drill back up. Whereas top app bar navigation is more about presenting a set of global destinations available within your application. Items in top app bars never have circles around them. In the Windows 8 design language, a circle around a glyph indicates that it's a command. Since these are navigation, they don't have circles. Likewise, your app bar at the bottom, your bottom app bar, are for commands that are relevant to the user at this point. So Windows 8 tries to get as much off canvas as possible. And in particular, what we want to do is we want to make sure that the user is really able to focus on the content that they have on screen right now, not where they could go, not stuff they could do. So if it's the primary activity for why the user is on a particular page, then that command should be on the canvas. Otherwise, the command should be in the app bar. And one of the reasons why Laura talked about taking all the app bars across your application and lining them up is one of the core design concerns is making sure that the positioning of the tasks that are in the app bar is consistent throughout the application. So we have some rough guidelines in terms of how you make a decision between right and left. We want global commands, application, basically tasks that are always available to be on the right-hand edge. We want tasks that are specific to the particular page to be on the left-hand edge. But the thing that supersedes that is this global consistency. So there are certain commands that will always be global, right? Things like creating a new item. That's always going to be on the right-hand edge. And that's something that ends up being the case throughout throughout all of the Microsoft first-party applications. We certainly encourage you to leverage that same pattern there. Did I miss anything? Okay. And so I talked a little bit about this, but snapping is one of those things that is a certification-level requirement. Your app can be snapped at any point. Your application really does need to respond to this. Now, there's a caveat to this. 9 times out of 10, or at the very least a large percentage of the time out of 10, your application will be able to present a useful experience in Snap, right? Thinking about what's the sort of multitasking type scenario for any given portion of your application is one of those design processes that you're going to have to work through depending on the scenario that you're trying to solve. There are some cases, however, where a Snap view just doesn't make sense. So for instance, right now, if you use the store app and you try to snap it, the store app doesn't give you a reflowed view of all the tiles or a reflowed view of an application detail page. Instead, what the store view does is it just gives you the store logo. And the reason why is the store team felt that that sort of snap view wasn't an appropriate way to experience going out and getting a new Windows 8 application. So think about how that works for your app. Think about what makes sense. Think about what are the scenarios that your application wants to support as it is snapped. You know, a Twitter app is a great example. Maybe I would want to have the snap view up right now to see what the Twitter stream is for this particular talk. Maybe not, actually, but hopefully yes. Think about what's that scenario that you want to maintain, that you want to enable. And it ends up being a really tremendous way to allow your application to live in many more contexts than it wouldn't have necessarily in other environments. Okay, so let's talk very quickly about terms and contracts. And then Laura's going to take over and talk a little bit about the store. So when you think about one of the kind of core design constraints or core design goals of Windows 8, it was driven out of a recognition that the current experience of applications right now, and the current experience for users of applications, is that applications end up being these giant silos, right? And I'm either in one app, or maybe I can go ahead and go into the other app, and I do it through a file system or through some kind of file exchange, or I do it through copy and paste. But at the end of the day, they're fairly disconnected. And that's what drives these sort of big, sprawling applications, because I can't do those types of relationships elsewhere. Windows 8 was specifically built using system contracts as a way to allow one application to extend to another application. And we want that richness to occur by virtue of the users installing all these additional apps and saying, hey, this is important to me. I like this app. I like this service. I like this particular thing. And I want to make sure that this app can connect to that app. So as you think about how to extend your application, The sort of easy, obvious ones are the charms, right? Almost every application should search. And as you've seen from the couple of different demos, the demo that Steve did this morning at the keynote, if you were in my session before this, the demo of being able to switch between applications, search ends up being a tremendous way for your brand to be surfaced throughout the user's application experience. And if you invest in a really great search experience, then your app is going to bubble to the top of that search list because the user is going to go back to it over and over and over again. Likewise, many of you have competitors in the space in terms of what your application does. If they invest in a better search experience, they're going to bubble up above you. You have to think about this type of stuff in terms of how to get your application to rank highly in the system. Share. Share is not just about social sharing. It's not just about me saying, oh, hey, look at this cool article. I want to email it out or Twitter it out or post it to Facebook. Share is ultimately about connecting one application to another application, right? So in my previous session, I demoed a path of how Wikipedia, in their most recent update, they actually decided to make themselves a share target. So I can share any arbitrary bit of text, and if I share it to Wikipedia, Wikipedia then looks that up, and I get this sort of inline definition or this inline article that allows Wikipedia to show up in many more contexts throughout a user's Windows 8 experience. Right? What are the types of scenarios that you can enable for your application? Devices is something that doesn't get talked to quite as much, but it ends up being tremendously powerful. Does your application print? Devices is your thing. Are you doing any kind of audio or visual or audio or video or pictures? The device's charm is what allows you to go ahead and stream stuff to any DLNA device on the network that you're on. So almost every Samsung TV right now, as an example, has a DLNA client built into it. So I can go ahead and automatically play my pictures to my TV or to my Xbox or anything else. Ends up being tremendously powerful. The settings charm is the one destination for how your users will set settings for your app. It's also where you do things like sign in, sign up, that type of stuff, account manipulation. We're trying to make sure that users know to always go there, right? We're trying to teach people that's the core pattern. Something that's also super important, that's going to be really important from a store cert perspective, that's where your privacy policy goes. So by default, when you're building your Windows 8 application, access to the internet is turned on. That means that you need a privacy policy. You need a privacy policy both in your store description. You also need a privacy policy in the settings charm, right? We've seen lots and lots and lots of applications get failed because they've managed to miss that. So definitely pay attention to that.
Your submission is the next step of the process, and obviously a big one, which thankfully you guys are participating in. It comes down to some of the things that you need to do in order to make sure that your user experience is complete. And you need to, we know you want to maximize the exposure to your customers. There are obviously opportunities in order to have spotlight areas within the store. And there's some promotional images that are included. As we've pointed out before in each of the vertical sessions, we talk about if you don't include the images, we don't have an opportunity to put you there. So please make sure that you're always uploading your promotional images. There is one that you can do as a minimum, the smallest, and then you can provide the others as you need to. But please make sure that you include these so that that this is a consideration for you. Another thing that we'd like to make sure you're doing is that you're building for Windows 8 and Windows RT. And so when you're going through, now that you have a Surface RT, you can make sure that you're testing it through and through. But this is another thing that you want to make sure that you're considering and make sure that, again, that your users, when they do see your information on the store, that they know that they can install it on the machine that they have also. Be age appropriate. So as Will mentioned, apps that connect to the internet must include in the settings and in the description for the Windows Store a privacy policy. An additional consideration is that if you don't connect to the internet, let's say you build for preschool age kids, you won't connect to the internet. you should at least let the user know then that you don't connect to the internet, because also that's an advantage for them in order to understand that their child will be safe. An additional thing is that if you have content that's appropriate for mature audiences, to make sure that you are setting content filters and that that content does not appear on your hub page. Again, the concern is making sure that things are age appropriate and that the right audience is getting your product. So if you do have these other situations, make sure that you're setting it up so that the content filters are enabled within settings and that the user can manage this. Those are the pieces that we have for a formula for reviewing your app. I'm sure that there are many more types of things, but that we can go into depth. We have some information that is available on WindowsUserExperienceTraining.com that you can go into depth. That was information that was recorded at release preview time period, but the content from a UX standpoint is still completely relevant. This is just the intro into how to review your app, but certainly you can glean many more tips from those types of types of areas, and make sure that you're creating a stable and stable experience for the users, and that you're helping to provide a consistent experience with things as small as from the app bar to as large as being able to rely on search in order to be able to find the information that's relevant to them. And again, don't forget to provide the users with information about the app all the way through the experience, including what is presented to them within the store. And make sure that you're giving the images, and make sure that you're setting information from a content standpoint so that they can find you and be happy with using your app.
Yep. So these slides will be available on build.com. Definitely encourage you to take a look at the resources slide in particular. So in particular, there's one of the links here is resolving certification errors. If you keep on getting stuck with your application going through the process, make sure to check out that document. It has a lot of findings that we have developed over the course of the last 9 months in terms of working with partners, getting them through the store certification. Definitely pay attention to design.windows.com and enjoy the rest of your build.
And also, the app fast track area, as a reminder, is available, so you can schedule 20 minutes in order to talk with people around your app specifically. It can be from an early concept standpoint all the way through to an app that's already in store. We'd be glad to give you some feedback. Thank you.
Thanks very much.